speak to tonight, Katie P. from Austin, Texas.
Thanks, Joel. Hi, y'all. Katie Parker, alcoholic. Ralph, thank you for inviting me a second time. You were actually my first Zoom meeting, and it was way more exciting than I gave it credit. I can tell you that. I was apprehensive about the whole Zoom thing. Matter of fact, my first idea was F this, and went into my prayer and meditation. This was months ago, and God's booming voice said, oh, you'll be doing Zoom. And unbeknownst to me, it's opened up a world that I just didn't even know we could be so touched by so many. And Ralph, thank you for asking me to do this a second time. Actually, you've asked me many times, and the schedule's been so crazy and so overwhelming. I'd just like to start by saying I've been sober since October the 28th of 1984, and I have said that date so many times because I've done so many Zoom meetings, and it is never lost on me. I mean, it blows me away. That makes me 35 years sober. I'm 62 years old. I came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous at 26 years old. I was a single mother. I had a five-year-old daughter. I had drugged that little girl in places she had no business being. And as much as I love that child, I was raised with good values. I knew better, right? We know that one. I just knew better. And I drug her in places she had no business being. And I would have swore to you that my problem was the outside issues. It wasn't alcohol. Don't touch my alcohol, right? Raised on good values. And I knew what I was doing was wrong. I knew something was wrong, but I had no idea it was alcoholism. And I chased a boy into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. He had 6 years. I had 10 minutes. Hey, match made in heaven, if you ask me. Thank God nobody was the arbiter of our sex life. You know, once again, I always hate to get into the middle of that. The book is very clear on that. And, trust me, I want to. But he and I actually spent 20 years together. And unfortunately, as you'll have to listen to my whole story because I'm here to talk on the second step. But we lost my husband after 20 years. Unfortunately, we failed to enlarge our spiritual life through work and self-sacrifice for others. And 23 years sober, he went back out and died of a heroin overdose. And he almost lost me in the mix. The story is really, really a testament to God's incredible hand and the will, what the will can do. Boy, oh boy. That's why I have such frustration sometimes in AA when someone says, you know, where's God and all that, or are you praying? Well, of course I'm not. I'm crazy as hell. You know, I'm not doing squat. So, you know, the book says that we are to grow in understanding and effectiveness. The two things that make me alcoholic is when I start, I can't stop, and I can't stop starting. That's it. That is my qualification. Unfortunately, I basically worked a program based on the abstinence of alcohol, and I'm not alone in that crowd, trust me. We're all seekers. That's the beautiful thing about this. We all are driven to find this power. We're driven to find out more about this power. We throw those gates so wide open, you get to choose any power you want. But we do this sometimes with both eyes closed, thinking we're wide awake. And so I'm so excited to talk about the second step. I don't always get an opportunity to share this particular step, and I love it. I think we should keep it. So my home group is the primary purpose group. We study the book line by line, week after week, and my husband likes to say it's a lot more fun than it sounds. And my meeting is directly after this one, and Ralph put the information in the chat box. One of the things we do there at that meeting that's a little different than most meetings is we ask you to not share your experience. We want to learn what the founders found necessary to put in the book, why they put it there, what's its purpose, what are they trying to open our eyes to, connect the dots to other places in the book. My husband is Charlie Parker. That's a whole nother long story, how Charlie and I got together. But he always likes for me to warn you guys. I'm a little bit like taking a drink out of a fire hose. I am a lot coming at you. That I know for sure. I came out of the womb like Mighty Mouse, and I've never really stopped. I like to also say that I'm the vessel to help you get connected to the power. I am not the power. I don't ever want to be the power. I don't want to tell you what car to drive, what boy to date, what job to take. That's not my job. My job is to get you unblocked so the power can tell you. That's all of what this second step is trying to set us up for. Notice I said set us up for. Because the second step is not where we have to have anything other than this lack of powerlessness in step one. The big book, I don't know if you guys know this, was named by the Library of Congress. It's one of the 88 books that shaped America. Think about that. That our book was one of 88. It's incredible. And I said this at a conference one time, and we've got 2,500 people in it. And I said, and you know what? I mean, when I came into AA, I did the big body of work, as most of us all do. And then I rested on my laurels, man. After I did that, I thought, man, I never felt so good. And I rested on my laurels, and that book sat on the shelf for 15 years. And when I said at the meeting after I'd mentioned it'd been named to the Library of Congress as one of the 88 books, there was a collective groan. And I went, oh, like your book hadn't sat on the shelf. Oh, show me an alcoholic who's been nailing it since day one. You can't, because that's what spiritual growth is about. Spiritual growth is about pain. It says in three different places in our book, it talks about purpose, right? Bill, there were certain books, certain words that Bill just loved, and purpose is one of them. On page 77, it says, our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. We're here to play the role God has assigned us. Very different. That doesn't mean we're do-gooders by any stretch. Yeah, do we need to show up with some level of integrity, dignity, honor, respect? These are very important things. But the truth of the matter is if lack of power is my dilemma, oh, I can show up in the world, but then I'm going to hit that third step that I'm in constant collision with somebody or something, even though my motive is good, right? That is what this whole thing is about. If the alcoholic cannot differentiate the true from the false, we need adult supervision, but we need spiritual supervision badly, right? Our primary purpose is to carry the message to the alcoholic who still suffers. And then the book, to show other alcoholics precisely how we have recovered, is the main purpose of this book. So there are three really powerful purposes that we are supposed to do. Step two, I misunderstood step two for many, many years. And I know I'm not alone in this, and I'm not saying we did anything wrong. But for many years, I misunderstood so much about spiritual growth. There is never any blame in my game. I made all these decisions based on self. I've never been a fan of blaming others for me not getting it. I guarantee there were plenty of people talking about this. As a matter of fact, Mark Houston was the guy who absolutely rocked Charlie and I's world. We had the privilege of having him at the house every Thursday night at our meeting at home for 4 years. And he, come to find out, when Joe and I were just terribly adrift, he was literally 2 miles away. Yeah, didn't know that, right? I guarantee this is around. I just don't hear it because I'm asleep, dreaming, I'm awake. What is step two about? Typically, most of us take a lot of the steps off the wall. I heard a guy one time saying, if you take the steps off the wall, you get an off-the-wall program. Well, let me tell you, I had an off-the-wall program. So I took the second step, you know, it is about seeking this power. And what I understand today is our program is about an intimate relationship with God of our understanding. This intimate personal relationship is no different than falling in love with your children, falling in love with a significant other, falling in love. That's what it's trying to get me to, that I have constant conversation. Think about this. When you meet, let's just say boy, girl, right? When you meet boy, girl, and all of a sudden, that's all you can think about. I mean, all day long, the sky is bluer, the music is brighter, and you just have this feeling. That's what we're trying to get with God all the time. Well, believe it or not, I did not know that was possible. Mark would just beat that into you. You know, watch, turn, awake, awake and aware. And what he was talking about was the disciplines of 10 and 11. And that's where this relationship comes from. But we've got to do this upheaval. We got to begin the unblocked process. And then we speak of God's consciousness. What is that? It's an intimate personal relationship, not knowledge, but experience. That's why we hit these walls in sobriety. I like to say between 18 months and 3 years, we're still working a program based on the abstinence of alcohol, right? Because we're just too immature spiritually to get what it's talking about. And I really don't care if you come in here with an incredible knowledge about God, an incredible relationship about God. That's what that set aside prayer is all about. We ask that you set these things aside because this experience is taking alcoholism, right? We're not just the average Joe Blow out there. We suffer from a fatal illness. And let me tell you, there is a level of outright mental defect, full flight from reality. We can't differentiate the true from the false. Do you believe that about yourself? You may answer no. Okay, well, rock on. Man, I can tell you I do. I am absolutely. And the type of personality I am is when I get scared, I take a step forward, right? That's the alcoholic of my variety, right? That's my DNA. That's how I show up. If you're the alcoholic who wouldn't say peep if you had a mouthful, that doesn't make you any less alcoholic than me. It's just the two different ways that self, S-E-L-F, shows up. That's why the book is trying to get us to understand my DNA. So I'm watching for me. Sometimes we read spiritual books, and that's all really important, but we're doing it for knowledge, not for experience. And I remember the first time I saw first of all, you handed me a book, and I mean, I cheated my way through school. I still don't have much for education for me. It just doesn't float my boat. I'm a life learner kind of person. And when I saw the chapter, We Agnostics, I thought, well, I don't need that. I mean, I believe in God. I don't really care much for him. And one less chapter to read, if you ask me. I like to say praying for God's will is easy. Accepting God's will is not. And the word agnostic, we also use a 1935 dictionary because words change their meanings. Agnostic means one who neither affirms nor denies the existence of a personal deity. So once again, if you're saying you're agnostic, we need to understand what that terminology means. We Agnostics starts on page 44. Mark used to say it is he read a ton of spiritual literature. He said it was the most profound piece of spiritual literature, hands down, that he'd ever studied. And we use the term read, but I wish we would change that to study. Because believe it or not, a lot of people don't even understand how to study. I darn sure didn't. And so the way you study is you read a paragraph. And then you go back and you turn statements into questions and you ask yourself, what does that line mean to me? Not what does it mean to my husband, not to my sponsees, but to me. And then sometimes in your morning time, you might just take a paragraph and study it for a week. You want that to really go in like a sponge. On page 44, it says in the preceding chapters, you've learned something of alcoholism. We hope we've made clear the distinction between the alcoholic and the non-alcoholic. Now, that turns statements into questions. Do you know the difference between the alcoholic and the non-alcoholic? How about the alcoholic and the hard drinker? You set us on a bar stool together, and we look exactly the same until the hard one of us has to quit drinking. And it says the hard drinker, given sufficient reason, can stop or moderate. So they look like us. People will label them alcoholic. But my brother's a hard drinker. I thought for years he was alcoholic. He can clearly stop and moderate from time to time. It's unbelievable. I mean, I have the allergy. So I like to say when people talk about, you know, I watch my sister drink a glass of wine and she leaves that much in there. I don't get that. Let me read this line again. In the preceding chapters, you've learned something of alcoholism. We hope we've made clear the distinction between the alcoholic and the non-alcoholic. I know we're looking for a laugh on that, but the new guy is really vulnerable. So you've got to know why your sister doesn't drink the other half of the wine, because she's not one of us. If when you honestly want to, now here we're going to sum up the qualification of alcoholism. What we just read from the doctor's opinion to page 43, they're going to sum it up right here. And it says, if when you honestly want to, you find you cannot quit entirely, or if when drinking, you have little control over the amount you take, probably alcoholic. I love that line. Then it says, if that be the case, you may be suffering from an illness which only a spiritual experience will conquer. Oh my gosh. And for some reason, people get all bent out. We're doing too much of God. All we have is identification and power, for heaven's sakes. And we want to just run. We act like we're running the new guy off with talking about God. But too much God, too much God. So you don't think the abstinence from alcohol is a little bit of a tough pill to swallow for the guy? Come on. That's all we have. In working with others, it talks about speak of the spiritual side freely on the first visit, believe it or not. But I like to say, step one is not trying to convince you that you have a problem, but that you have no solution. Listen, I'm going to say that again. It's not trying to convince you that you have a problem, but that you have no solution. You see, if I think alcohol is the problem, then I'm going to work a program based on the abstinence of alcohol. You know, you hear somebody say, well, at 20 years, well, I'd have gone that far for a drink. The drink is but a symptom, right? By the time in sobriety, if I pick up a drink, it's not the problem when I see it. It is the solution to my problem. And why should I be interested in the power if I thought I could still do it on my own? Then it says a little bit later on in We Agnostics, it says, if he is alcoholic of the hopeless variety, once again, if you turn statements into questions, you have to ask yourself this. Some of you may not know what it means to be alcoholic, and you've got double digits. I didn't. I assumed I must have been, but I really didn't grasp what the book was trying to tell me. It says, and I love the terminology, to be doomed to an alcoholic death or live on spiritual basis are not always easy alternatives to face. I mean, think about that. The average person goes, what? You find out you suffer from a fatal illness and only a spiritual experience will conquer and you're questioning it? Yeah, I am. Yeah. And the question I ask, if you're going to turn statements in, do you believe this? Are these your two options? There's three more places in the book where it's going to bring this up. Page 25, blotting out our intolerable situation the best we can or accept spiritual help. Page 53, crushed by a self-imposed crisis I couldn't postpone or evade, either God's everything or he's nothing. And then page 133, the deliberate manufacture of misery, God didn't do it. But when trouble comes, we cheerfully capitalize on it so he can show his omnipotence. So it's either blot out that intolerable situation or accept spiritual help. Well, what does that look like, right? It says lack of power is my dilemma, right? Why does it say dilemma? Because they both suck. Okay, so all of a sudden, I need $200 by tomorrow. I'm not going to go to prayer. I am going to get on the phone and start finding $200. I'm going to figure out what I could pawn. I mean, that's the thing. Now, today, don't get me wrong. Do I go to prayer almost immediately? Am I here to fit myself to be of maximum service? Yes. But I do these disciplines as if my breath, next breath, asks for it. I didn't do that for many, many years, but you spiritually grow into that, right? And that's after you've had your ass handed to you about 8,000 times. Then you finally get to that place where you go, whoa, 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 whoa. And then it goes on to say, but it isn't so difficult. About half our original fellowship were of exactly that type that did not want to go to the God thing. Cheer up. Something like half of us thought we were atheist or agnostic. Our experience shows that you not be disconcerted. That means bugged, right? Unsettled. And that's why I like to say identification and is all we have. When we get this, I don't know, get your panties in a wad about the God thing. Oh my God. If somebody is having trouble with God, and it's a second step issue that they're not willing to continue to do the work, it's not a second step issue. It's a first step issue. Not really wanting God or believing in God in the second step, but you're willing to continue the step. Half our fellowship had it. I still asked at conference, I'm asked to speak. I say, raise your hand. I'm curious to know how many of you guys, when you came into AA, had a problem with the whole God thing, atheist, agnostic, whatever you want to call it. It's still half our fellowship. And one of the other things that I think is important about this is that's all we have. If that bothers you, we're not going to change one of our main tenets just to not upset you or hurt your feelings, man. I always say, rock on, brother. There's plenty more stuff out there you can try to do, but that's all we have. It would be like me going to Jiffy Lube, asking them to clean my teeth, and the guy going, ma'am, we change oil here. I don't care. I'm not happy with that. I'd like me to clean my teeth. It's ridiculous, right? I really don't understand the argument, because there isn't an argument. You get to do whatever you want, but if you start standing in the way of the only two things that we just read, that the only thing we know is a spiritual experience will conquer, what's the point of going on? I always like to say, we talk always about the new guy, right? The new guy, most important person in the room. The new guy is the blood of Alcoholics Anonymous, okay? Important, he's no more important than I am, right? But he's the blood of AA. I am the oxygen, right? I've got to be continuing being several steps ahead of this guy so I can help the blood become the oxygen, right? And I think it's important, because sometimes we always talk about the big book like we're talking to the new guy. This book goes as deep as you want it to go. So if we're talking about that, I want to look at the second step under current agnosticism. What do I believe God can't fix for me, heal for me, show me? And make that list, man. Take that in your evening review. Take that into On Awakening. Really start looking at it. So where does current agnosticism show up? If it says that if a mere code of morals or better philosophy of life were sufficient to overcome alcoholism, many of us would have recovered long ago. Now, these are codes and morals, right? Just be a better person. Well, just don't argue with your husband, honey. Would you rather be right or happy? Oh, well, I just want to slap you. I want to be both, but I definitely want to be right. You know what I mean? So when you give me that as my solution, you're asking me to work the promise and hope the step comes true. It says that I am a victim of my own delusion, that I can wrest satisfaction and happiness out of this world if I just manage you well. See, this is all about self-reliance. It says, but we found such codes and philosophies did not save us no matter how hard we tried. We could wish to be moral. We could wish to be philosophically comforted. In fact, we could wish these things with all our might, but the needed power wasn't there. Our human resources, as marshaled by the will, were not sufficient. They failed utterly. I worked an AA program like chicken soup for the soul. And don't get me wrong, I love that book. But I just kept thinking, if I read something great, then I'll just start feeling better, right? The longer you get me away from alcohol, and I was doing, back in 1984, it was codependency group therapy, right? We were learning all about our inner child and self. I know so many ways that self shows up for me, but I was trying to fix self with self. You know, I'm the kind of mom who spanked my kids. That seems to be just horrible today, but that doesn't fall outside my value system. I spanked my kids. And let me tell you, my kids are 10 years apart. That little 5-year-old is 41 now, and my son is 31. But I don't believe in slapping. And I was never slapped. I was spanked, but never slapped. And I slapped both my children in sobriety. Now, they're 10 years apart. They were both teenagers at the time. So I slapped my daughter. I was probably right around, I guess I was 7 years sober. When I slapped my son, I was probably 17, 18 years sober. And no one was more shocked than I was. And I remember the first time I read that Mere Code of Morals or Better Philosophy, it's like puzzle pieces snapping together. It just made so much sense, right? I mean, I have stolen in sobriety, infidelity in sobriety. I tried to bribe a doctor in sobriety, not for pills, but to get rid of some paperwork on my husband because it looked like I wasn't going to get his life insurance. You know, I've got no problem being transparent. I mean, transparency is such a gift. Do I recommend you go into your home group, raise your hand, and admit all your open faults? No. We are also one of the most judgmental group of people you'll ever meet. That's between you and your sponsor. But for you guys, I mean, I've been asked to share a part of my story. Now, I'm not going to go into my infidelity. I'm not going to go into my stealing. I gave you my slapping of the kids. But if I'm knee to knee with the drunk, you can bet that I am going to be telling my whole story to them. It says on page 45, lack of power was our dilemma. We had to find a power by which we could live. There you go. Turn statements into questions. That power is going to be ever changing. And it had to be a power greater than ourselves, obviously. But where and how were we to find this power? Well, that's exactly what this book is about. Its main object, remember we read this, is to enable you to find a power greater than yourself, which can solve your problem. That means we've written a book which we believe to be spiritual as well as moral. Interesting, huh? And it means, of course, that we're going to talk about God. Well, the one thing about we agnostics is it's not just talking about religion and your understanding of God. It's talking about prejudice, right? It talks about prejudice 6 times. What does prejudice mean? It means to prejudge without examination. Boy, when you really get that 10 and 11 working for you to where you're stepping outside of yourself, watching your thinking, right? This is not watching your actions. It's watching your thinking. Of course, there's going to be actions in there. But just watching your thinking, I offer this for your consideration for the rest of the evening. Just watch your thinking till you go to bed. Don't judge it. It's not about judging your thinking. You're not responsible for your first thought. You are responsible for the thoughts after that. So this prejudgment that we do, it says, yes, we have agnostic temperament, have had these thoughts and experiences. Let us make haste to reassure you. We found that as soon as we were able to lay aside prejudice, right? This is prejudiced about everything. The sooner you understand you're a hypocrite, oh my God, it's so freeing. I mean, I am such a hypocrite. I am so judgmental, right? The different ways that I judge, how is that? I judge through my own values. I judge through just straight judgment, codes, morals, right? If you step outside, my God, this environment, holy smokes, it's even hard to do a 10 step with somebody because it almost lends itself to politics. And because it lends itself to politics, we are to be hands off. This is a very, very difficult time for us to respect our traditions and respect everybody. And I don't do Facebook, I don't do social media, but I have heard some crazy stuff going on there. And I just suggest that, you know, please, please, please do not damage the program of Alcoholics Anonymous because you've got strong opinions, right? Prejudgment. And it says, and even express a willingness to believe in a power greater than yourself. We commenced to get results, even though it was impossible for any of us to fully define or comprehend the power, which is God. We're not trying to. Intimate personal relationship. As soon as we admitted the possible existence of a creative intelligence, I like that one. Spirit of the universe. Hope it gives you goosebumps. Underlying the totality of things, we begin to possess of a new sense of power and direction. And possess means to be controlled by, right? This is where God is going to start controlling me. His voice is going to be the louder voice I hear. But you can't do that just by prayer. You have to do that by getting unblocked and staying unblocked. How do we do that? The 10th step. Watching for resentment, dishonesty, selfishness, and fear. And when these 4 things crop up, ask God at once to remove it. Talk to somebody immediately. Make amends quickly if I've harmed anybody. Resolutely turn my thoughts to others, not my actions. Then the evening review is the 11th step, right? We check our work. How'd I do? I hope you spend about 15 minutes reviewing your day. It doesn't tell you to write it, but I'll tell you, if you write it, you will be blown away at what you see, right? And then it talks about this possessed with this new sense of power and direction, provided we took other simple steps. This is what we're trying to get people to do. I think that most of us, and if you're at all like me, I'm never saying you. I may say it in my verbiage, but it's only because I did it all. And, I wrote that big honking piece of inventory, and then I didn't write another piece of inventory for 15 years. And then when I did write a piece of inventory, I didn't write another piece of inventory for about 3 years. Yeah, now I write an evening review inventory, especially fear based on this atmosphere, probably twice a week. I write inventory on someone or something once a month, I would say, no more than that. It says, this second step problem, remember what I said, is if you have a second step problem and are not willing to go on with the rest of the work, it's a first step problem. It's not a second step problem. More than half our fellowship had a problem with the God thing. And so it says on page 14, simple but not easy, a price had to be paid. It meant the destruction of self-centeredness. I love the words that Bill uses, destruction of self-centeredness. That ego will rebuild day after day. We found that God does not make too hard of terms for those who seek him. Well, ask yourself a question. What are the terms of this deal? I had no idea. You know, Mark was the one who was answering all these questions. It says on page 63, this is where the terms of the deal are. He will take care of what I needed if I stay close to him and perform his work well. Well, in order to stay close to him, I got to get close to him. In order to get close to him, I got to get unblocked. See, I thought in order to get closer to God, I needed to learn more about God. And I'm just getting blocked like crazy. I got to get unblocked and try to stay unblocked. My experience is, we get blocked pretty easily. Now, the longer you're sober, you go through phases. Remember I said 18 months to 3 years, the new guy is working a program based on the abstinence of alcohol. I worked one on the basis of alcohol being the problem for 17 years. But if you're, especially with what's going on right now, you're being able to hear people a lot, kind of saturate yourself with things that are just going, holy smokes, I hadn't heard something like this. It's what we did with Mark. So you're going to hit another wall between 3 and 5, 5 and 7, 7 and 12, 12 and 15. And it goes on and on and on about every 3 to 5 years. Now, the longer you're sober and actually working an AA program, actually writing inventory, actually still making these amends, actually doing your evening review, actually looking at your 24 hours ahead and sponsoring, why that has become an optional step is beyond me. You're actually doing these things. These walls become later and later and shorter and shorter. So you can still hit walls. I think you're going to because of spiritual maturity. I like to say, how do I play God? I control, I manipulate, I have expectations, agendas, judgment, justify. Oh, the list for me is endless. But here's what's tricky. We sometimes, and I don't really get on this, you know, we're going to change the big book and the big book is outdated. This is an atmosphere. I didn't know a lot of things could take place that are taking place, so don't get me wrong, but I don't think we're going to be touching the big book. And one of the beautiful things about that, we don't need to make it more understanding because of the, you know, once again, that poor new guy. Well, everybody has had a challenge with this. 85 years, for heaven's sake. If you don't know what the having goose flesh means, it goosebumps. Look it up, right? I got to Google all the young people's stuff 90% of the time. Google some of my stuff. And so this list is endless. So I like to not use terminology in 2020 that is not the terminology in our book. So I like to teach that. We use this term codependent, right? Like, oh, you've got such a codependent with the relationship with your parents or with your boyfriend. What does that even mean to our big book? I suffer from alcoholism, not codependency based on what it looks like today. It means I'm the actor running the whole show. If everyone would do as I wish, that's codependent. Then I'm manipulative and controlling. That's a self-seeker even when trying to be kind. Expectations are ambitions in our book. And then belief systems, right? Talking about, you know, family of origin stuff, your belief systems, the book uses old idea, prejudice, values. See, this is very important that we really begin to go deeper and deeper into this amazing piece of spiritual literature that was named by the Library of Congress as one of the 88 books that has changed us, and mine sat on the shelf. Yeah. And like I said, come peek into our meeting. If you really want to learn more, make a commitment to yourself. It was like the one woman said that we are so undisciplined. It says God disciplines us in this very way we've just laid out in the book. And I guarantee there's plenty of people that are challenged. This has been a very difficult time. And I'll tell you, I've hit about 12 walls throughout this whole pandemic. And I like to really say that my AA program blows me away, the level of discipline I've got. And I've hit 12 hard walls. So you can't talk about the second step in this understanding of God without hitting the third step. It's what I call the second surrender, right? Emotional sobriety, call it what you want. But this misunderstanding of the third step, I once again take the step off the wall. It looks like I'm basically made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God. Okay, done here, right? And oh my gosh, so much more. The third step is trying to wake me up to the many different ways that self shows up. Then we take the third step into the fourth step and you actually find out my DNA, exactly how Katie tries to get her way. How does she get the actor running the whole show, forever trying to arrange the lights, the scenery, the ballet? If everyone would do as I wish, the show would be great. Everybody, including myself, would be happy. How much problem is that for you people to read your script, right? I don't care what you want to have done. Just follow me and everyone will be happy. I like to say, what does that look like? Well, I'm the sheriff of the world. Oh, my God, I go through life just throwing flags on the field. Flags on the – what's that person doing standing over there? Didn't they see that the light changed? For God's sakes, move, 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 move. But, I mean, oh, my God, I can't even begin to tell you how much work I've done to get my hands off of that. And that one came with a tremendous amount of pain. I see, we sit on this throne of judgment, this state of separation, right? What causes that throne of judgment and that state of separation? I am driven by my old ideas. It said the result is nil until we let go absolutely of these old ideas. And then if you ask somebody, what are your old ideas? And well, I don't know. And you usually pick three of when you were a kid. You know, nobody ever likes me. I'm not smart enough, and I'm just overweight. Okay, those are three, but... Oh, you now got an old idea on a pandemic. I mean, oh my gosh, we're making old ideas every day. So if you're writing current inventory, you're going to see your old ideas that you're coming up with. Where do we find old ideas? We find them in a third column of a resentment inventory, your self-esteem, pride, ambition, security, personal relationships, sex, and money. So ask yourself, if you're still checkmarking those off, take it a little bit deeper and just ask yourself, how is your self-esteem affected? Because it says in the book, it assumes we see that your self-esteem was affected. I say, how? And most of us can't answer that question. I know I sure couldn't. So self-esteem, what does that mean? It's the value I've placed on myself, not the feeling. The value I've placed on myself. It's an I am statement, right? In most of my inventory, my dad, let's take the first one, my dad. Oh, my dad and I bucked heads so bad. I left home at 15. You usually argue with the parent you're most like, right? You just, oh, go at it. And my dad, and second column, he loved my sister more. He always shamed me, and he never showed up to any of my events, right? Three bullet points. Inventory is designed to be written quickly, trust me. Don't let that ego get in the way, just write. And then it affected my self-esteem. Well, I'd say I am a good daughter. Oh, sure. I'm the daughter who invited my father to ask me to move out at 15 because I was such a swell kid, right? And, oh, I mean, the delusion behind that, in that scenario. And then my pride, right? How does my pride show up? It's the value I place that others see me. No one should, could, or would. My ambition is what I need to have happen. What I want to have happen. My security is what I need to have happen. See, these things are so important. My personal relationships, my deep-seated beliefs on what this situation should look like. Dad should always love their daughter. So I'm because we're fighting, I'm acting as if my dad doesn't love me. I have invited this man to be at the end of his rope. See, I missed a lot of that. Then in the fear inventory, you can see the fear inventory is two columns, three columns, four columns. I don't really care how you do your fear inventory as long as you're just following the dictates of the book. And it says, didn't self-reliance fail us? So where is self-reliance, whatever column you want it to be under, that's where your old ideas are going to be, right? We turn to self-reliance and it still doesn't solve the fear problem. But when I get scared, I take the reins. Sorry, God. Whoa, I got this one. And then the conduct inventory, oh, my God, it's a conduct inventory with an emphasis on sex at the time. But once you take sex out of the picture, it's an inventory based on how I show up as a mother, as a neighbor, as an employer, as an employee, sponsor, sponsee. And it's all the fourth column, right? You're looking for old ideas everywhere. I love that it says each step tells us when to take it, how to take it, and why to take it. Isn't that fabulous? But unfortunately, we've become a oral AA. And don't get me wrong, I was a huge part of that movement. I kept thinking, you guys just don't get it. You're missing the whole codependency recovery therapy. And don't get me wrong, I still believe that therapy is a privilege. Absolutely. I go in and out from therapy from time to time. But let me tell you what their job is to talk about who's in column one, my dad. What did he do? Column two. And what it affected column three. That's their job. That's where they stop. So you want to take that information to your sponsor so she takes us to column four. this was our course. Is it possible that they, like myself, are sick too? Help me show them the same patience, tolerance, and pity I grant a sick friend. You see, if you want to pray for the other person, that's great. But this is talking about the prayers for me. But in oral AA, we've stepped aside from all of that. And I used to just hope you had read the big book so you could talk in the meeting about it so I didn't have to read the darn thing, right? You've heard things like step one, you did it before you got here. What does that even mean? Steps one, two, and three, the same thing. You worked all three of them just getting here. No, that wasn't Dr. Bob's experience. That wasn't Bill's experience. And that darn sure wasn't my experience. You have to understand what it means to be an alcoholic so that you can concede to your innermost self that you got no shot at this deal, right? And then step 10, I thought it was the evening review. I wasn't doing it anyway. But come to find out, the evening review is the 11th step. Oh, I mean, we muddy the water so bad. In 85 years, we've already messed up 5 steps. And let me tell you, if you believe that this is an inherited illness, that it is family after family, pass it on. I believe it's a genetic bullet. You can certainly believe whatever you want. But if it's a genetic bullet, I'd like to believe that this program stays whole and safe for my grandkids. God forbid one of them be it. I like to say staying sober is the bare minimum. So when we come in here, we do all this work, right? It's urgent, urgent, urgent. There's nowhere in our book that says chill. You're supposed to be working those steps right out of the gate, right? And once again, I'm not here to argue that point. Just read the book. If the book says what it's to do, that's what we have to offer. But what we do is after we start to feel some relief, we stop doing the work. I think that happens to you're almost 17, 18 years sober. You do the work, you get the relief, you quit doing the work, you get the pain, then you start doing the work again, you get the relief, you quit doing it, back. It's that vicious cycle, same cycle we were in with alcohol. I like to say that you fall asleep and dream that you're awake, right? So what happens? We fall into these bedevilments that are on page 52. The word bedevilment means relentless torture. Anybody know that feeling? Oh, yeah. We alcoholics are riddled with torture. It says on page 52, we had to ask ourselves why we shouldn't apply to our human problems this same readiness to change our point of view, turn statements into questions. So there, here's the questions. We were having trouble with personal relationships. Are you? We couldn't control our emotional nature. Some of you guys may be staying in bed for 2 days, you know, not talking to anybody for 4 days. Or going over to the other side. We were prey to misery and depression, right? That depression is a level of self-centeredness that is, I mean, self-pity that is just off the chain. We couldn't make a living, right? And if you can make a living, are you satisfied at that job? We had a feeling of uselessness. We were full of fear. The new term is anxiety, right? We were unhappy. It says we couldn't seem to be of real help to other people. These are the bedevilments that we are in. And let me tell you something. At 17 years sober, the obsession to drink came back, but I was such an active personality in Alcoholics Anonymous. I wasn't about to drink. I was the alcoholic that was going to take a handful of pills and kill myself. Now, I'm not a suicidal gal. I'm a homicidal gal. But let me tell you, when I'm thinking suicide, it's scaring the crap out of me. And I always like to say, oh, when the obsession to drink comes back, it came back ever so slowly. When it comes back, somebody said, well, you can't fight it. Oh, you damn sure can. You can fight it right up to the day you drink. That's a game of Russian roulette. You don't know when that's going to be. And thank God that God is constantly sending life raft after life raft after life raft for me to get in. And Mark Houston was one of them. And had it not been for Charlie Parker, my best friend, man, he'd had his plane crash. He's having this spiritual experience. I've lost my husband. I swear, I thought a spiritual experience was supposed to feel great. It's like free falling in black space, man. It's the enlightenment that feels good, not the awakening. The awakening is God dang painful, right? So the book talks about this logic, right? And I love the logic because we are thinkers. We love to think. It's the voice of reason, self-reliance versus God-reliance. That's what we're doing. I always like to say I was a lot like Ray Donovan, you know, I was the fixer out there. I may have to pop a few people out of this situation, but I'm going to fix it. It says on page 53, logic is great stuff. We like it. We still like it. It's not by chance we were given the power to reason, to examine the evidence of our senses and to draw conclusions. This is one of man's magnificent attributes, right? Now, let me tell you something. In this 11th step, the 10th step, we are watching our thinking. And the 11th step has us really dissecting it, right? The evening review, how'd I do today? Not just a yes or no question, but some real in-depth questions. And then it says on awakening, right? If you want to sit in silent meditation, rock on. That's not what the directions are telling you. You can add that to the end of it. The directions are telling you to look at your 24 hours ahead. Why? Because I'm going to bring yesterday into today. We're to ask to be divorced from self-pity, dishonest, and self-seeking motives. Doesn't say fear. Kind of an interesting thought. And so why are we to do this? Because we're going to take what we had yesterday, bring it into today. So I got to look at my 24 hours. I'm going to run into this person, and I'm not really digging there, but my sister's going to call me, and I might be having trouble with her. God, help me see what you want me to do here. And in the 11th step, it says, under these conditions, that's a state of mind, we can employ our mental faculties with assurance. For after all, God gave us brains to use. I've heard people say, well, God gave us brains to use under these conditions. If you hadn't written a piece of inventory, trust me, that brain is dangerous out there. You might be starting to make decisions based on self that later place you in a position to be hurt. It says our thought life will be placed on a much higher plane when our thinking is cleared of wrong motives. Now, that's a little bit of a hiccup because it tells me over in the third step that I'm always in constant collision with somebody or something, even though my motives are good. So it doesn't say bad motives. It just has motives. Well, let me tell you, when I get up in the morning, I have an expectation, a motive that my car is going to start. Well, you can't get rid of motives. That's why we're trying to get you to hear this still, quiet voice often. But the voice is so quiet, it's very easy to dismiss. Then the book goes on to two places. I love this, where it talks about worship. Page 54, we found that we had, really hadn't we been worshipers? What a state of mental goose flesh that is, that brings on. And like I said, you younger guys, Google it. Had we not variously worshiped people, sentiment, things, money, ourselves? Yes. I always get a little challenged when my sponsees go, well, I made him my higher power. No, you didn't. Worship means to excessively turn your attention to workaholism, spending money, exerciseaholism. It's not a holism. It's alcoholism. You're just not doing what you need to do. And so we fill the space, the air with those things. On page 55, it says, actually, we were fooling ourselves. For deep down inside every man, woman, and child is the fundamental idea of God. Ponder that thought later tonight. It may be obscured by calamity, by pomp, by worship of other things, but in some form or another, it's there. It was there drunk and sober. God loves us drunk and sober. You heard that voice when you were drunk. Don't do that. Don't go there. It says, for faith in a power greater than ourselves, miraculous demonstrations of that power in human lives are facts as old as man himself. Sometimes we have to search fearlessly. You bet. We found the great reality deep down inside of us. In the last analysis, it's only there he may be found. It is so with us. Now, let me explain. The last analysis, I was always looking for God out here. I went down. I was always leaning towards Western religion. I mean, I did Bible study, fellowship. I did church. I'm not saying don't do those. It's along with AA, not instead of. And so I did all these things trying to find God out here. And in the last analysis, it's down deep inside. It says, I love where it talks about clearing the ground a bit. You know, in the 11th step, it says, with this attitude, you can't fail. What attitude? I thought, I got a good attitude. Okay, bring it on. But listen to what this attitude is. You can only clear the ground a bit. You can only, if our testimony helps sweep away prejudice. Now, think about that. My judgment on everything. You've got to be able to really see that you judge everything, enable you to think honestly. So it's assuming we're having a little difficulty. What? We can't differentiate the true from the false. right? Encourage you to search diligently within yourself. It means to swallow and digest large chunks of truth about yourself. Oh my gosh, sometimes I've heard people say things like, well, I feel like you're judging me. Whatever. I'm your sponsor. You've asked me to tell you things that you don't really want to hear. Let's move past that. I'm doing it in a growing and understanding and effectiveness, kind and loving way. But if that's where you want to stand, oh, we're not going to make it very far. And then it says, if you wish, you can then join us on this broad highway. With this attitude, you cannot fail. The consciousness of your belief is sure to come to you. I like to say spiritual growth is like maturity. In your 20s, you're bulletproof. In your 30s, you start trying to find yourself. In your 40s, you look back at your 30s to see how well you did. You're starting to get that a little bit taste of mortality. In your 50s, you're clearly in mortality. You really start to see that this is important to slow everything down. For me, I've only gotten to 62, so I can only speak that far. But let me tell you what. I can bring a day down to the minute. That's what I work on. I want to slow everything down. When you got a flamethrower at your butt of mortality, I want to make sure I don't miss anything. You know, I've heard people say, life just passes you by. You blink an eye and it goes. Instead of seeing that as a negative, look at that as a positive. God's trying to tell us, can you stay here through this talk? We've been going 50 minutes. Have you been able to stay present? Or is your mind just like a hamster wheel? I get it, right? We've got technology now. My God, we look at our phones so often. What if we turn to God as many times as we look at our phone? You know, this is a real tough discipline to do. And so that spiritual maturity is like maturing, right? What used to work for you at 3 years sober doesn't work anymore at 6 years sober. You have to go deeper and deeper and deeper. I like to say God's either everything or he's nothing. Thank you very much for having me.
Well, thank you, Katie.
You bet, Jules.
I just love listening to you, and I can't get enough. Now I need to pull this back up. Let me see. I did that. Okay, so our next meeting is scheduled at 7 p.m. Eastern Time tomorrow. Let me see. Let's go ahead and open the meeting with a question and answer portion of the meeting from comments in the chat, which will be read in the order they come in. So if you have a comment or question, put it in chat, and as they come in, we'll take you in that order. And go ahead. And also, Katie, there may be some messages for you in the chat as well.
Thank you. And I put my email address on, if you'll pin my screen, you know, you put up to that little three, that thumb that's got the three dots, and then pin it. My email address is there. If my what I say floats your boat, I can send you a ton of stuff. Just send me an email that says, send me your stuff, and I can give you even more. You know, some people speak the same language, so I don't mind doing that at all.
Joel, we got a hand up. We got a couple of hands up.
Okay. Let's see. Okay, the first one is Lil from Canada. You have to unmute yourself, Lil.
Okay, I did. Hi, Katie. Thank you. This is Lil from Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. Great job. I love your energy. Oh my goodness. Did you ever do a, I love it. I love how you pull the other steps into it. I love how you refer back and forth, and just what a phenomenal, awesome job. And I will be attending your meeting later. I've heard you speak of it before, and then I lost where I put the Zoom ID. And so I'm so grateful that you're on tonight. Thank you so much. Awesome.
You bet. I noticed in the chat some of you guys are sending me your email address. I can't do that. I have to write it down. It's easier if you just email me. So sorry about that, but it just gets overwhelming.
Okay. Any more? I don't see any more hands raised. Oh, there's one. Goodwill is the last name, or Goodwhile. That you need to unmute yourself.
Hi there, thanks. My name's Graham. I'm from Scotland. Just like to thank the group for having the meeting on, and the group members for their service, the readers and yourself, Jules, for chairing. And Katie, wow, I thought I spoke fast. Oh my God, the amount that you get in, and I was just nodding away and just so much identification with everything, absolutely everything. It was a phenomenal share, an absolute phenomenal share.
Thank you.
Today I'm 43 days sober. I did have 3 years, but with the lockdown and different family stuff, illnesses, etc. going on, and my own mental health, 2 months of sheer hell. But everything you were saying, it just made so much sense to me. 18 months to 3 years, that was just about me to a T, you know. It was just judging everyone, and I stopped. Basically, I could give you a million excuses, a million and one excuses. The truth, the fact is, I stopped doing it. I didn't have a life. I had an existence in alcohol. Basically, alcohol was the love of my life.
Mm-hmm.
I got 3 years sober, and AA saved my life, but then it gave me a life. I mean, in that sort of year and a half, 18 months, I got a life that I've never had before. Got emotions that I've never had before. Didn't know how to cope with it. And then the sort of lockdown, my mum got a terminal illness, my auntie as well, and excuses. I stopped doing, or I cut back, cut back that balance. And I went out for 2 months of sheer hell, you know. But I'm 43 days sober today, and everything you said, it just made so much sense. And I just thank you for it. Just
you
glad
bet.
To hear sober. Hey, thank you.
Be sure and email me. I'll send you a bunch of stuff. What time is it there in Scotland?
It's just 1:05 in the morning.
I thought you were staying up a little late. I've been talking to a gal over there. And she called me a little while ago, and it was 8 p.m., and I thought, oh, I think he's staying up. Well, shoot me an email, and I'll give you a ton of stuff to look at.
Thank you.
You bet, hon.
Thank you. Next, we have Denise D. Please unmute yourself. Denise, are you still there?
There we go.
Please unmute. Okay.
Yeah, it had to give me a certain button to hit. Hi, Katie. So glad to be here. Man, I'd like to thank you guys for having this meeting, having it on the step. And Katie, you speaking, I hear what you say so clearly. And I'm grappling with this guide idea lately. And so true about the self-reliance thing, the thinking. And it doesn't matter where we're at. It's still one day at a time. And it's still, I am not it. But when you talked about and I'm going to do some homework on this, because I love what you said about main purpose, primary purpose, and real purpose. So I'm already going to look those things up, and I really like that you ignited that in me, and especially the question, though, of this higher power. what in my life can he not do? So thanks. I really needed this message this evening.
You bet.
I'll see you in a little while at the primary purpose group.
Sounds great.
Thank you, Denise.
Thank you guys
next
for
we
being
have,
here.
Mm-hmm. Next we have Mark D from Tucson. Could you unmute yourself, please?
Yes, I can. Katie, thank you.
Thank you.
Great talk. When is your Austin meeting?
It's at 7:30. It's in 20 minutes.
Is that every night or just Tuesday night?
Just Tuesday.
Okay, thank you.
You bet.
We have Rose from Ohio. Could you unmute yourself, please?
Hi, Katie. Thank you.
You bet.
I had you on Founders Day, and I had you before. I love your talks. Thank you. And your husband, you have 6 months over him, and you've been killing him with that.
He'll love that.
Yeah, thank you so much. And today, I thought I really stood out with the old ideas, self-sufficient. So, I can do it all. So why do I need God? And by the time I know it, I'm running out, and I leave God out of it. And I have to come back and say, wait a minute here. You have to let God in charge here. So thank you for your talk. Thank you for your work. And I love you so much. So.
Thank you.
I'll email you for stuff. Thank you.
All right.
I was looking for your big book meeting that you guys do line by line.
Mm-hmm.
I was looking for the code. So now that I found it, I appreciate it. I will be seeing me on that one. I love
great.
It.
You good. And here's the good news. When, like I said, when our meeting, when we go back to our regular brick and mortar building, we're actually going to, Zoom has birthed a new primary purpose group meeting on Wednesday nights at 7:30. It'll be the same ID number, but it won't happen until we're gone. So we're going to start at the doctor's opinion. You want to learn that book. Cliff Bishop did a fantastic job coming up with this. It's really cool.
Wow. Thanks.
You bet.
Hey, last two. Last two got to be really
quick. I'm sorry.
She's got to get to her meeting, so these last two can be really quick.
Thanks, Ralph.
Okay, Pat, Mac. Well, I don't see them anymore. Okay, how about Mike from Windsor, PA?
Can
you unmute yourself? There you go.
Yep. Yeah, Katie, I just wanted to thank you for speaking. I fell off the track a little while ago after 8 months, and I've been sober for about 4 now. But I'm a firm believer in God doesn't give you what you want, but he gives you what you need when you need it. And I definitely need to hear this tonight. And I definitely want your email address so I can definitely get you to send me some stuff.
You got it.
Thank you.
You bet. So did you get my email address on my picture? You pinned my picture?
I'll have to check it out here.
Are you doing it on your phone?
On tablet, but
okay. Because if you up in the top right corner where the three little dots are, where you unmute yourself.
Yeah.
You go up to that, and then it says pin this picture, and when you pin it, it makes me be the whole picture. And down at the bottom, it's got my email address and primary purpose group's number. But it's gogirl@texas.net. You'll put it, Ralph, in the chat.
It's in the chat, Katie.
Yeah,
okay. Right on the bottom in the chat. Colleen put it in there.
Thank you. And Mike, it was nice seeing you smoke a real cigarette.
Oh.
It's kind of fun to see a real cigarette these days. You're like, wow, that's cool.
Thanks.
All righty. Thank you all for joining us. We have a nice way of closing. After a moment of silence, because it's still sick and suffering alcoholic that does not